Hi, everyone, and welcome yet again to the Medics Pro podcast. It's really lovely to have you all listening again. We haven't obviously done a podcast for a little while. We've been so busy and we do try and get them out as often as we can. But sometimes just with the day to day tasks of work, it does make it tricky. But we're really excited today because as promised, we said that we were going to try and get some really good guests to come on. Just the people like you that are working age agency through Medics Pro, but obviously have other things going on in their professional careers. And it's really interesting for us to talk to these people. So today we are really excited to have a doctor who's going to come and talk to us. And that doctor is Raj. So good afternoon, Raj. How are you?
Hello. Hi.
And we also have Gail, obviously, as always. So hi, Gail. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Marianne.
Great.
Up here in the Midlands.
Perfect.
Weather's bright and sunny, but a bit chilly, so.
Yeah, I definitely feel we all know it's winter now.
Oh,
so, so maybe more people are going to be listening to podcasts now the winter months are coming. So we'll try and make this an interesting one for people. So, Raj, lovely to have you come and speak to us. Before we talk about what you've set up in terms of a company, which is obviously really interesting, first of all, how did you come to start working with Medics Pro? Talk to us a little bit about your career to date and how you started doing some locum work for us.
Sure. So I did my foundation training.
Mm-hmm.
And it became clear that my interest was digital health.
Yeah.
And in order to pursue that, there was no way that I could be on the general medical rota.
With 0 hours
demanding,
for anything.
Yes. So the on-call frequency is demanding, mm-hmm. and my startup is all-consuming in and of itself. So I was looking for some regular locum work, which gave me the flexibility and the time to pursue what it is I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And through Medics Pro, I found that. So I hope that's a good enough plug. But yeah, shout out to Chris too,
landed
me this role.
Any other doctors out there? Definitely Chris is the guy to speak to. He is fabulous.
Most certainly.
And how many years have you been working for us now? Is it under a year or is it over a year now?
This will be my second year.
Second year. Fantastic.
It's just over a year.
And what sort of shifts do you work as a doctor?
Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And occasionally, if we're short, then I'll pick up an on-call shift. And that's also quite useful from my perspective because I'd like to maintain those acute skills.
Mm-hmm. What's your background? What sort of shifts do you do?
So I'm just on the – I just work in a hematology ward, mm-hmm. Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and like I say, occasionally picking up an on-call shift.
Every now and then at the weekends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. So obviously now you've got that part of your professional career in order in terms of working as a locum. It's obviously going smoothly and it's allowing you this time to work on something that's obviously extremely exciting, obviously very, very, very special to you. Can you talk to us a little bit about your company? So your company is called Rewire Rehab. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And okay.
We're building an app which is called Rewire, funnily mm-hmm. enough. And the app offers personalized neuro rehab, giving stroke survivors the capability to maximize their recovery potential.
Okay.
The way it achieves this is we take a baseline assessment, which constitutes 10 simple questions, essentially asking, can you replicate the movement being shown in the video?
Mm-hmm.
And the outcomes of that assessment determine a dynamic exercise program with weekly activity goals.
Right.
Good.
And how did this all come about? So, how and why did you decide to set this up? What was that sort of pathway to get to that point?
Sure. So the impetus was really working in stroke. It became very apparent to me that we're falling far short of clinical targets.
Mm-hmm.
So the NICE guideline stipulates that stroke survivors should receive 45 minutes of physio and 45 minutes of occupational therapy every weekday.
Right.
And for some context, last year's National Stroke Audit found that stroke survivors in the community received only 19% of the physiotherapy that they ought to have had, and around 70% of the occupational therapy. So this translates to lifelong disability. The implications of this are huge, both from an individual's point of view, but also from a societal point of view, because there are huge care costs that come with such a disability burden. And like I say, I had an interest in digital health, and I've used health and wellness apps myself. So it just kind of made sense to me, really, that this is a huge unmet need. And I think we could really make a dent in this problem if this was done properly. And just to make the distinction there, Rewire is a therapy. So we are offering personalized physio and occupational therapy. And really kind of the origins of this were quite humble. So while I was working in stroke, this was at the height of the pandemic when garden centers were shut. And I just thought there must be something that we can do to help keep stroke survivors active.
Yeah.
And we took surplus gardening materials, we packaged them into boxes, and then we gave them to stroke patients. We actually went to people's houses and handed them personally with PPE, of course. And that seemed to be well received,
yeah, massively. I mean, I think we sort of forget, really, I think from the pandemic's perspective, I don't know about you, Gail, but we are obviously very aware of the acuteness of everything that's going on. And you sort of forget about people that have got, you know, chronic conditions or ongoing rehabilitation. It's almost as if that had to just stop overnight. Yes. And I can see now, you know, even just you sort of... It's not just in stroke patients, I'm presuming, it's in cardiac patients and, you know, lots of other different types of conditions, you know, all the help and assistance and support that they had to, you know, try and make the best possible recovery for themselves, overnight just stopped and there was nothing. It must be really scary for those patients as well.
Most definitely. I mean, from both an acute care perspective and a recovery perspective, we can see that outcomes were compromised, and we're still seeing the shortfall of the pandemic. You know, we talk about it as though it's a historic event.
Yes.
Thankfully, you know, we're past that, but the ramifications we're still seeing with waiting lists for elective operations being huge, and with just the workforce being tired and drained and burnt out. So it was a tough old time.
And people's recovery hugely compromised and now delayed, and the knock-off effect of not having that sort of acute therapy at the initial times when it is so important to get people on the best possible road to recovery. If there's that big delay to then have to restart it, you know, I don't even know in some, you know, cases whether it's almost like too late or whether, you know, so much damage has been done because they haven't had that consistency during that period of time that, you know, obviously the ramifications of that are absolutely huge.
Yeah. I think as well, as Raj mentioned, it's, you know, we need to capture these patients in the acute phase. So, you know, following admission, initial diagnosis and assessment, it's so important to capture them at that point to give them, you know, half a fighting chance, really, to make some decent degree of recovery. In your opinion, Raj, how long do you think it might take for us to catch up with, you know, everything that happened during that pandemic?
That's a question. that is a question. I'm not really sure it's one that I can answer, if I'm perfectly honest. I don't know. What I can tell you is that I think we need investment. I think the workforce as a whole needs a lot of investment and support, because we do have a big problem with attrition. We're seeing quite a lot of people go elsewhere, do alternative things, or go abroad where the conditions are more favorable, and recruitment is an issue too. So as the workforce becomes more stretched, our lives, our jobs just become more difficult, and we're not able to deliver the standard of care that we aspire to. So for me, that seems to be a glaring issue. And across the board, I'm talking from a doctor's perspective, but also from a nursing, from a therapy point of view, these sentiments are shared. And we've seen that, just on the news this morning, they were talking about nurses striking for the first time in the history of nursing. So it's not a huge surprise to me that we're having to resort to these things, because the situation is precarious.
Yes. And with stroke patients, Raj, how soon, I know it's probably on an individual basis, but how soon do you start to incorporate this, the digital therapy side of things? Is there an average time post-admission or individual cases?
It's a good question. We know that starting recovery as soon after the insult as possible yields the best outcome. So rehab as soon as possible is the prescription, really. And it doesn't matter. I mean, rewire should be used as an adjunct to therapy being received. It's really important. We actually don't want to detract from physio and occupational therapy time. Our goal is actually to optimize that process. And I'll talk a little bit about that later, but certainly the sooner that you can start therapy, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. For people listening and not even heard of Rewire, which is probably most people that are obviously going to be listening to this, talk to us about exactly how people would access it, how it works, how it's personalised, if at all. Talk to us in sort of more, a little bit more detail, if you would, please.
Sure. So in terms of access, we're just starting a pilot. The therapy isn't available yet. We'll be piloting in County Durham and Darlington Trust at the beginning of next year.
Fantastic.
With a view to rolling out in different trusts subsequent to that. In terms of how it works, so we've got three types of workouts. There's upper limb, lower limb, and balance. So balance really incorporates yoga and mindfulness. We know that only 7% of stroke patients receive psychological support after discharge. So while there's a glaring need in terms of therapy, the provision of psychological therapy or support is even worse. So we want to address that component too. And going back to your question about how it works, so the assessment is just 5 questions for upper body and 5 for lower body. And it's just asking, can you demonstrate the movement being shown? Anybody can do that assessment, just not the person that suffered the stroke themselves. So we don't necessarily need a physio or an occupational therapist to do that. We just need somebody else there for objectivity purposes, because it's quite hard to judge how well you can do something. The outcomes of that assessment generates a personalized program with workouts that vary from 15 to 30 minutes in length. And we have weekly activity goals that correspond with the intensity and frequency of therapy that we ought to be giving. Does that kind of make more sense?
And in terms of actually doing those assessments and accessing, is it all on sort of Teams or Skype? Is it an electronic assessment? So rather than face to face?
No. So this is an app that we're building that you can access through a smartphone or a tablet.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you can rehab in your own environment with the support of people at home, really, your support unit, your friends, your family. As part of it, we want to hold weekly activity sessions. So most regions have a stroke recovery service. We would like people to, the social element of that is really important. So as part of our pilot, we will be hosting weekly sessions where we will talk people through workouts. If they have any issues, we can do it with them. And also just explore kind of their recovery journey and any issues that they may be having.
Is it going to be marketed for a certain age group or a certain type of patient that's had a stroke, or is it basically for absolutely anybody?
No, it's for all patients who've had a stroke. And then we will be looking to expand the remit of the app to include patients with more broad neurological injury, which includes spinal injuries. So I've got some experience in spinal rehab. I worked at the regional spinal injuries unit in Yorkshire, and that informed quite a lot of what we do. The rehab is a little bit more complex there. So stroke is an easier place to start, and it's also much more prevalent. So it's a bigger problem. And that's kind of what drove me to tackle this first.
Mm-hmm. How do you tackle the issue with the elderly sort of accessing or using sort of smartphones and apps, et cetera? Only thinking my mum is 76, she can barely use her Nokia phone, let alone an iPhone. Unfortunately, she had a stroke. It was quite a few years ago now. She's made a really good recovery. Fantastic. But how does it work with, you know, is it something that you'd really, in those cases, need somebody, you know, like a son or a daughter or a neighbour or somebody that could actually sort of do it and assist them with it? Because obviously a lot of elderly aren't massively good with their IT.
Yeah, that's spot on. And when I was working on a stroke unit, I would go around the ward and in a 24-bed, 26-bed ward, there was maybe two patients who would have a smartphone or a tablet.
Wow, gosh. So she's not alone, I can tell.
She's not alone. We do know, incidentally, we can see that the incidence of young stroke is increasing. So by young, we're talking about age 65 and under, people of working age. The incidence of stroke more broadly is stagnant at just over 100,000 a year. But certainly the age at which people are having strokes is coming down, we can say. But to answer your question, and it's a very good one, we don't expect everybody to be tech savvy, and that's fine. But you're right, you would need somebody to go through that with you, which actually benefits your recovery. So there's a substantial body of research that substantiates the fact that recovery is better when you've got the support of your friends, your family. Yeah. You've got a strong support unit to endure that journey.
Yeah, and encourage you and get you out of bed and get you moving and get these exercises done, et cetera. I can see that.
Most definitely. And one thing that occasionally we would have family members come to the stroke ward and they would be able to attend therapy sessions. And I don't have any data to support this, but just an observation, it appeared that these patients who had that support did better. And one thing that we always found was that nobody was aware of their rehab goals. patients didn't know, family members didn't know. We would often have family members asking what they can and can't do, how they can support, but there was some hesitancy because they didn't want to precipitate an injury, they didn't want to cause pain.
Yeah.
So with this, we're actually engaging everybody. It's a concerted effort with the therapy team, with friends, family, and with the individual at the center. And we're pretty sure that that approach is going to yield better outcomes than the current one, which is let's see this patient three times per week, either as an inpatient or an outpatient, half an hour at a time, and hope that they recover.
Where do you see the timeline of activity for potential national rollout for the app going forward?
That's tricky, really. I would hope to say as soon as possible. But trusts, so the current model that we have is we've got these commissioning groups, CCGs, across the country, and they're pretty much responsible for the commissioning of services in their area. So it's a case of approaching those on an individual basis, seeing where the need is greatest and seeing who has the means to pay for the technology. And the other thing is that the CCG model is changing. It will now be overhauled and we're transitioning towards something called primary care networks. So that's going to change how services are commissioned. And we're yet to really navigate that. That's happening as we speak, but we are going to have to, that's going to take some working through. Certainly.
Yeah. And would you, you talked a lot about yourself and the app. Would you like to very briefly give us a roundup of your team that you have supporting you and working with you on the app?
Yeah, so of course. So I've got Amy, who's my co-founder. She's fantastic. And she has a background in software engineering. So she actually recently left a startup that optimizes the recovery journey for orthopedic patients. She brings a lot of really useful experience, and she's the one that's essentially building the app with the support of a couple of other people. And then we've got James, who's a MSK physiotherapist. And then we've had the clinical input from a lot of other specialists. We've got Dr. Brevin Thomas, who is he is a neuro rehab physician, and he's supporting the pilots that we're rolling out at County Durham and Darlington Trust. And there have been a few other doctors and therapists that have shaped the app. It's really been an iterative process, so I've missed out a fair few people, but it's a case of we built a prototype and then we showed it to stroke patients. We showed it to the therapy team. We got some feedback and then we addressed the issues and we looked to improve it. And we've done that over and over again until we've got to a stage where we feel we've got something good enough to solve the problem.
Gosh, it sounds really interesting, like hugely interesting. We could talk all day about this. It's such a fascinating subject. Honestly, I've got so many questions. I'm sure you did as well. You just mentioned earlier, I'm interested when you said that the age of stroke patients seems to be very slightly coming down. And so you're seeing younger people having strokes. Is that correct? Did you mention that earlier?
People... Mm-hmm. Of young stroke survivors is increasing, yes.
Yeah. So what, in your opinion, what do we need to do? You know, why is this happening? What are the cause factors? What's changed over the years? And what, you know, can anyone out there that's listening to this, just in terms of their own personal health, what are the main factors that we need to avoid to stop this from happening? if
any? Great question. That's something that we're very focused on. So while there's a lot of emphasis or the focus really is on the person that's had a stroke, mm-hmm. equally we want to mitigate their risk of further stroke. And it's really an opportunity to galvanize carers of that person to say, look, somebody that you care about has had their life suddenly changed. They may now have a physical and or a cognitive deficit, and we don't want you to suffer the same fate. So we ask that, we ask ourselves this question a lot. Mm-hmm. We've become much better at blood pressure mm-hmm. management over the past few years. So that's something that's handled quite well in primary care. There's a big drive from the Stroke Association for better detection of atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. So that's a disturbance in your heart rhythm, which mm-hmm. predisposes you to ischemic strokes. So if we take a step back, there are broadly two types of strokes. That you've got your ischemic strokes, which is a clot, and they account for 85% of strokes. And then you've got your hemorrhagic strokes, which is a bleed on the brain. Mm-hmm. So picking up AF, which can be done via an ECG, but often an ECG just captures your rhythm at a particular moment in time. So sometimes we need to give somebody a heart monitor mm-hmm. and look at a heart rhythm over 24, 48 hours to detect that. So that's definitely something that we need to get better at doing, and there's a big push for that. And then it's the age-old diet and exercise. It sounds trite, but these are two of the best weapons that we've got to mitigate our risk of loss of pathologies. The problem is that I don't think that we do it very well. And when I say we, I think the information that we give people isn't fantastic. I think the time that we spend focusing on prevention is negligible. And again, that comes back to the NHS being so stretched. If you think about GPs, they're working so hard and within the constraints of a 10-minute appointment, how can you possibly explore these things? It's very, very difficult to make any meaningful change in that time mm-hmm. period. So we need to get better at engaging people when it comes mm-hmm. to diet and exercise. And there have been some novel developments. So one example is social prescribing, which has become more popular. So GPs are actually prescribing forms of exercise or giving you access to a gym mm-hmm. in the same way that they prescribe an antihypertensive for somebody with high blood pressure. And I think that's fantastic. If mm-hmm. you can do more of that, and if you get more data to support that, then I think that would be really, really useful. And then lastly...
No, go on, sorry.
Sorry, the only other thing is stopping smoking. Mm-hmm. We say it time and time again, and it's not an easy thing to do for people that do smoke, for people that do have a bad habit. It's very difficult, but there are plenty of services out there, and it's a big risk factor. Mm-hmm. It's also an expensive habit, so mm-hmm. you improve your health straight away by stopping smoking, or you certainly give yourself the best chances of doing that, and then also you save yourself a few quid, which in this climate I think we would all welcome.
Yeah. In terms of vaping, though, because obviously in terms of most certainly the sort of younger generation, they seem to, I mean, obviously I'm just talking off the cuff here, but moving away from smoking but are now vaping instead. Mm-hmm. Has there much study in terms of stroke with vaping at all?
Not that I'm aware of. No. So I don't know, to be honest.
It's probably too early, maybe.
I would like to know. Yeah, well yeah. That's it. I think the jury's out on vaping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know where people stand, but certainly it's not good for your health. So it's not mm-hmm. something that we would advocate. And we don't even know if it's a better alternative to smoke. I don't know if it's a better alternative. I'm sure there are people who can clarify that or who can shed mm-hmm. a bit more light on that, but that's not something that I'm aware of.
It does seem to me, I think, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to just say just very quickly in terms of when you talked about, you know, there's just not enough done really in terms of prevention, PR to encourage people to live healthier lifestyles. And I just thinking about how much information was in the press, on the television, in the newspapers during the pandemic around, you know, washing hands and tissues and masks, etc. And because of that, how on a huge scale, everybody completely complied with this health information that went out there. And if they did the same with, you know, information to prevent stroke or heart disease, you know, if that sort of campaigning continued, but for other diseases that kill and obviously put a huge amount of pressure on the NHS, it would be so effective, wouldn't it? Yeah. If you just think how effective those health marketing campaigns were, you know, literally across the whole of the world. And yet, you know, we've got other diseases that, you know, kill just as many people, historically, but there's just very little sort of airtime, is there, or marketing budget, it seems, to do enough to literally make people think, gosh, I really do need to make that change.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And the problem is that you don't see the impact of that straight away. It's not like a randomized controlled trial where you can look at the efficacy of a drug and monitor outcomes. After a couple of years, you can publish a paper. This would be kind of long-term, longitudinal follow-up that would be needed to support that. So it is difficult. And we know that government tends to have a very short-term agenda. So that creates a problem or a conflict. There have been some good interventions. I think we've reduced rates of smoking, actually. So if you look at kind of the UK in comparison to Europe, we've done quite well over the past decade or two with reducing smoking rates. The Couch to 5K was quite a successful campaign. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more of that, really. I think they've tried to make healthy eating a bit more accessible. But I think that's something that we've not really tackled yet. And all, of course, kind of the cost of food has an impact on that. So with food prices and inflation, then, that makes kind of healthy eating and good choices more difficult.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's just when you think you get, you know, started with something and then we've obviously, you know, got this huge issue at the moment in terms of, you know, as you said, cost of living and food prices have just, I mean, personally, on a personal level, I just, it's, you know, crazy how much every single item of food that I tend to buy every week has gone up. It's not, you know, just a couple of pence, you know. No. I like milk, 30 pence more, you know, for a big bottle of milk. It's not, you know, and you add all those 30p's up for people, it's just crazy, isn't it? So people are going to be buying the sort of cheaper, more filling, less healthy foods. And this in itself could have such an impact again in another 5-10 years' time. So it's like, it's just, it almost feels like sort of two steps forward, one step back all the time, doesn't it?
Raj. Oh, sorry.
No, carry on because...
almost done. For any of our listeners, Raj, if they were interested in following the development of the app and, you know, keeping up to date with how things are going and how things are being rolled out, is there anywhere that they can actually look online to follow the developments?
Certainly. Our website is rewirerehab.com. So we will be posting a bit more nearer the time of the pilot. And then, of course, we will look to publish our results more formally of the pilot. So that is really, that's our kind of our outlet at the moment. And you should see and hear more about what we're doing in the next few months as we generate some early patient data.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Raj, it's just been absolutely fascinating talking to you. Unfortunately, our time has come to an end, and it just seems to have gone just in a nanosecond. But we really appreciate you coming on to talk to us. We would absolutely love to have you back, you know, even if it's like in a year's time you know, we could put a diary note to speak to you in November 2023 and see how everything's going, how things are coming along. Yeah. And I'm sure everyone listening to the podcast today would love to know and catch up. And obviously it's definitely one to watch. It does sound, you know, such an amazing, piece of technological, you know, breakthrough really to make such a difference to so many people. Be very interesting. Thank you. Anything just finally from you? Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Gail, anything finally from you?
No, again, just to say, thanks, Raj. As Marianne has mentioned, it's absolutely fascinating, and we wish you well going forward in the future with the development. And fingers crossed it gets rolled out and everybody who needs it gets access to it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It. It's sharing something so innovative and so exciting, and for us to have the ability to talk to you about it is great. Maybe in five years' time, you'll be on the One Show or on Question Time or.
And I'm not sure how I fell on Question Time, but maybe
get a look in. thank you so much, Raj. It's really lovely.
Thank you for your time. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone that's listening to the podcast today. As always, please share our information and get all your colleagues to download and listen. And anyone listening today that would like to come on and talk to us, please do. Please obviously contact your consultant or ask to speak to Marianne or Gail, and we would love to hear from you, and it could be you on as our next guest. We're hoping Bill Keith will be back for the next podcast. She is still with us. She's just actually on holiday at the moment. So we hope that she's well, and thank you everyone for listening. Until next time, take care. Speak to you soon.